The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. And lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend.
Good day. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. If you die as an unbeliever, your spirit will live for a very long time as a disembodied ancestor spirit or demon. The Creator has said regarding unbelievers, "Why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist?" If you die as a believer without any form of relationship with the Creator, you'll end up in the outer darkness, a cold, black, terrible place with weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Your teeth. The trash heap of heaven. Father has said concerning such believers, "Why would I want someone to be close to me in heaven, which inherently means I will give them great prestige and authority, if they do not have a deep personal relationship with me and have not proven to me that they can be trusted in this life?" In stark contrast, if you make a real effort to seek relationship with the Almighty, the rewards in the life to come are huge. A glorious resurrected body, great prestige, great authority, and a permanent close relationship with the Creator and with Yeshua, who you may mistakenly know as Jesus. To put this all in context, the Almighty has said, "I created human beings, this planet and this universe, for men and women to be my friends, my companions, to explore and learn and develop together. My greatest grief is that almost no person understands this, let alone seek such a relationship with me." Today we're going to look at firstly the essence of my message concerning Yeshua. We'll then talk about solid evidence of Yeshua. And then we'll discuss that Yeshua was a Judean, a Jew, and he spoke Aramaic and Hebrew. The essence of my message, the overview. I've written many articles relating to Yeshua, incorrectly called Jesus. This broadcast seeks to distill the essence of my message. We will say that his name was Yeshua, not Jesus. We will note that he's the most powerful created being because of his sinless life and death. We will clarify that he was the first spirit created, that he was born of a virgin and was filled, anointed with the spirit of Yah. We will stress that his death was carefully planned and orchestrated. We will note that he spent time in India, Tibet, and Persia. It will be pointed out that he was a Hebrew and a Jew, an Old Testament emissary or apostle. We'll then look at solid evidence of the reality of Yeshua, and that Yeshua was a Judean and spoke Aramaic and Hebrew, citing various sources. Finally, we'll look at the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator. By way of introduction, who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in engineering and I'm a retired military commander. I now work as a consultant and business manager. I have nearly 30 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty, following a dramatic encounter with him on the 12th of March 1993 when he spoke to me audibly in a locked room and I knew for certain that he was real. I was confirmed in the Anglican Church at the age of about 13 and I served as an altar boy for a number of years from the age of 19. Eventually, married to an unbeliever, I became disenchanted with the hypocrisy in the church and backslid to a point where I was not even sure the Almighty existed. In this backslidden state, I embarked on an adulterous affair, which when it ended, left me desperate and suicidal. It was then that the Almighty spoke to me, and I realized that my intellect had gotten me into a right mess, and I chose to serve him faithfully for the rest of my life. In doing this, I applied my deep-seated aversion to failure, born out of an accident in early childhood, coupled to my engineering and military training of rigor and preventing failure, to my seeking of knowledge about Father. This journey led to numerous supernatural experiences, prayers answered, and clear communication with the Creator that forms the basis for what I teach in these programs. What is End Time Issue Ministries? It's the organizational vehicle for delivering my message through email, articles, websites, this radio program, physical books, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, SlideShare, and Twitter. What is this program? The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. It represents the essence of my message. See the website www.endtimeissueministries.org for more information. That's endtimeissueministries.org. See also www.relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. That's relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. Click on the show on the top menu and podcasts on the drop down for previous broadcasts, or search on Google for Relationship with Creator Radio, in quotes. You'll find there's about three or four podcast websites which have got the archive of the broadcast. So today's message, 2021-0405, the essence of my message concerning Yeshua, incorrectly called Jesus. I've written many articles relating to Yeshua. This broadcast seeks to distill the essence of my message. See the website, the webpage Yeshua on the website, and the child pages for detailed discussion. The key points are set out after this. Folks, if you haven't come across my teachings before, if you're not aware that the true name of the man that most people call Jesus is Yahushua, which means Yah is salvation, where Yah is the true name of the Almighty Creator. Some of what I'm going to say in the next few minutes is probably going to sound a bit foreign, but I really want to encourage you. Father desires to be called by his true name, which is Yah, and Yahushua desires to be called by his true name, Yahushua, not Jesus. This is so important. If you really want to get close to Father, you want to get close to Yeshua, you must please call them by their correct names, not the Lord and God and all this other stuff. It's just not helpful. Father said to me, if you love me, call me by my true name. It's as simple as that. So Yeshua, not Jesus. His name was and is Yahushua, meaning Yah is salvation, where Yah is the true name of the Almighty Creator, Yah the eternal self-existing. See the web page, Creator's name, Yah, the eternally self-existing, and the child pages to that. Yeshua was a common Hebrew name, translated Joshua in the so-called Old Testament. Jesus is a blasphemous Greek name that means blessed of Zeus, where Zeus is a pagan, that is satanic or demonic god. And it's an insult to call Yeshua Jesus. See the web page, Yeshua, not Jesus, on the website. Yah extended grace for the use of Jesus up to 2003, but this was withdrawn at that point, and there's now a curse associated with the name and a demonic mastermind. If you're not familiar with the contest, just the headlines, Hillel, one of the three major messengers, angels, rebelled. Father was going to cast him into the lake of fire and brimstone. He challenged Yah to a contest, in terms of which he said at the end of 7,000 years, there would not be a single person on earth who believed in the Creator. And Yah took on the challenge. He's just about lost it. And so Satan has corrupted things. Part of the challenge was that at the end of 6,000 years, if he'd already succeeded, then he would rule from that point, Satan. At the last minute, there was a believer who was in right standing, and Satan was cast into the pit for 1,000 years. But for that to be done, for that judgment to be granted, all grace for the use of the wrong names, etc., had to be withdrawn. So it's still working its way out. You're seeing all sorts of things going wrong in the world, and that's a manifestation of this. Secondly, Yeshua is the most powerful created being because of his sinless life and death. Yeshua is the most powerful created being in the universe because he lived his entire life and died without sin and was therefore instantly resurrected. He's the only human being to ever live their entire life without sinning, even when he died a terrible death. As a consequence, Yeshua is seated at the right hand of the Father, waiting for us, those who believe, to make his enemies his footstool. Yeshua will only return at the end of the millennium, around May 3003, that's 980 years from now, if there is at least one human being in right standing and free of sin to call for his return, and if at least at some level the forces of darkness have been defeated. And then secondly, Yeshua is king of all human kings and lord of all human lords. Yah is king of Yeshua and lord of Yeshua. Yeshua gives us authority over the satanic and demonic realm, but we must exercise that authority in his name. One of the traps that people fall into who've seen Yeshua in his most powerful and glorious form, and he can manifest in different ways. He can manifest just as an ordinary human being who really looks no different to you or I, or he can manifest in this mighty, powerful, glorious state, which is actually what he was granted. And the thing to realize is he wasn't created that way. This was the reward that was given to him because he reestablished authority over the forces of darkness on earth through living without sin. There's all sorts of mystique and mystery and magic and what have you around Jesus. It's not true, folks. The miracle of Yeshua is he lived for 33 and a half years on earth, did not sin once, even when he died a terrible death. Point number three, Yeshua is our advocate who pleads for mercy for believers, particularly young believers, in the court of heaven. The satanic and demonic realm are the prosecutors. Father Yah is the judge. Four, Yeshua is our high priest who intercedes on our behalf with Father. Five, his body and blood provide the atoning sacrifice for our sin. If we confess and repent, and take the bread and wine as he instructed. Seven, Yeshua has a spectacularly glorious resurrected body and is massively powerful. He can manifest in human form and also in the glorious form that goes with his position with Yah. He's able to engage in multiple conversations simultaneously, watch multiple situations simultaneously, and manifest in multiple locations with multiple people simultaneously. He has other powers. So one of the traps people fall into, they see Yeshua in his glorious state, and they think that's God. That must be the Almighty. No, the Almighty is much more glorious, much more powerful than Yeshua. He just gave a small amount of that power to Yeshua, a hang of a lot more than anybody else has got. So Yeshua looks spectacular, and he is spectacular, but he's not Yah, folks. So if you've seen Yeshua in his glorious state and you think, oh, that's God, no, it's not. It's a lie that Jesus is God. He's a created being. He would have no authority on earth if he was not a created being. You could not pray in the name of Yeshua if he was not a created being. He would have no authority over the satanic. And that's a delegated choice of the Almighty. And thirdly, the spirit that became Yeshua was the first spirit ever created. When the Almighty started his creation project, his first act was to create a spirit being to assist him. That spirit being eventually became the man we know as Yeshua. He served alongside the Almighty in an executive, as in chief operating officer position, assisting with the creative process throughout the creation. He was therefore highly knowledgeable of Satan's ways when he came to earth. So, there are a few Bible verses which refer to this. And again, it's misinterpreted as indicating that Yeshua is the Almighty. No, he simply was the first spirit that Yah created. And in that capacity, he assisted Yah substantially. And that equipped him to come to earth. Be aware that he came to earth voluntarily. After the fall of Adam, Yah and Yeshua sat together and tried to figure out how to overcome what had happened, and they concluded that the only way to do it was for a human being to live without sin and therefore regain authority over Satan. And it was concluded that the only human, only spirit that had any possibility of doing that was this first created spirit, whatever his name was there. I don't know his name at the beginning. And so he said, okay, I'll go to Earth and do this job. He knew exactly what he was going to do, knew exactly how he was going to die. Then he was born of a virgin. He was born of a pure, as in free of sin, virgin. By a creative miracle within an ovum in the fallopian tubes of Miriam, incorrectly Mary, and he was therefore free of bloodline curses and demons. It's important to note that he is a created being. He is not divine. There is no Trinity. He is not Yah in the flesh or God in the flesh. He is not God. And Yah did not have sex with Miriam. Those are all wrong beliefs that lead people to completely underestimate Yeshua. Folks, he's an amazing person. I mean, he did what no other human being has managed to do, living his entire life without sinning even once, even when he went through the most horrible death. I mean, the majority of human beings, if they were put through what he was put through when he died, would be saying, you da-da-da-da-da-da-da, swearing, cursing, blinding. And he didn't do that. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So forget all the mumbo-jumbo and the magic and what have you. Yeshua lived a life free of sin. The reason he was created in the fallopian tubes of a virgin was so that he would be pure. And the creative miracle of Yeshua is less of a miracle than the creation of Adam from the dust of the earth and the creation of Chava, Eve, from the rib of Adam. In point number five, Yeshua was filled or anointed with the Spirit of Yah. When Yeshua was immersed by Yehuchanan, John, the Baptist, Yehuchanan the Immerser, Yehuchanan meaning Yah has graced, Yeshua was filled with the set-apart Holy Spirit of the Almighty, descended from heaven as a dove. It was the Almighty in and through Yeshua that performed miracles and prophesied, and not Yeshua. This is so important. People look at the accounts of Yeshua's life, and he walked on water, and he changed water into wine, and he raised the dead, and he healed the sick, and he gave sight to the blind, and he spoke on behalf of the Almighty very authoritatively. None of that was the man. It was Yah in and on the man. So yes, in a sense, Yah came to earth through Yeshua. But he does that through every anointed man and woman who operates in power and authority. And there have been a fair number of anointed ones in the last few hundred years and in the last few thousand years, who have been filled with the Spirit of Yah and moved with power and authority and performed miracles, etc. I met a woman about 13 years ago, who had raised 19 people from the dead. She cast out demons. She healed the sick. She spoke intimately to Father. She was filled with the Spirit of Yah. Nobody said she was God. They all knew it was Lorraine. And they accorded her due respect. It was the Spirit of Yah in and on her that allowed her to perform those miracles. Then point number six, Yeshua's death was carefully planned and orchestrated. Yeshua's death on a stake at the hill of Golgotha, or Skull Hill, outside Jerusalem, was planned over 1,000 years earlier by Yah and Yeshua, and was carefully orchestrated so that his blood fell on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. So Yeshua came to earth knowing exactly how, where, and when he was to die. He then spent 3.5 years provoking and antagonizing the high priests, scribes, and Pharisees to come to a point where they would call for his death. See the webpage Miracle of Yeshua, Jesus' Death, for a detailed discussion. Folks, this is so important to be aware. Visit that webpage, Miracle of Yeshua Death, Jesus of Yeshua Death. It sets out in detail all the planning that went into arranging that when Yeshua died, his blood, there would be an earthquake, there would be a crack through the foot of the stake hole, not across the stake. His blood would, his side would be pierced with a spear. He would die of a broken heart. The water and blood that came from that would run down the side of the stake, down the earth crack, and onto the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant that had been hidden there by Jeremiah, something like 560 years before, when Babylon invaded Jerusalem, and so on and so on and so forth. So important to understand that what happened to Yeshua was very carefully planned. It was not an accident. Then, point number 7, Yeshua spent time in India, Tibet, and Persia. If you look carefully at the accounts about Yeshua in the Protestant Bible, I can't comment on the Catholic or the Russian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox Bibles, but I assume it's roughly the same. There's a gap between the time that Yeshua reasons with the priests and the Pharisees in the temple in Jerusalem at the age of 14 and the time where he reappears on the scene at the age of 30. When he turns the water into wine at the wedding feast. So at the age of 14, Yeshua left Israel and traveled to India, Tibet, and Persia, where he taught and was taught. Specifically, he learned spiritual principles that had been lost in Israel. See the video, important videos to watch towards the bottom of that list. This is really important, folks. There are people, yogis and what have you, in India, Tibet, Persia, who also serve Father. Not necessarily a lot of them, but there are certainly people in those countries who serve Father in religions that are not widely recognized as serving Father. And so the piece about walking on water, that was a thing that he learnt, I believe, while he was in India or Tibet. Those miracle-working powers were not manifest in Israel at the time that Yeshua came. Then Yeshua was a Hebrew, a Jew, an Old Testament emissary or Old Testament apostle. Yeshua was and is a Hebrew and a Jew. All that he carried out was under the covenant of Moshe, Moses, the so-called Old Covenant. The New Covenant through Yeshua only came into effect the moment Yeshua died and his blood fell on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. Yeshua was therefore an Old Testament emissary and spokesman, apostle and prophet. I hope that that gives you a clear understanding of who Yeshua is and what he accomplished. It's so important to understand that Yeshua was a Jew. Jew is simply a corruption of Yahudite, where a Yahudite is one that serves Yah. And so you get certain groups of Christians who hate the Jews because the Jews killed Jesus. But Jesus was a Jew, folks. He came for the Jews, first and foremost. The Jews were his people. He was a Jew. Everything that he did as a Hebrew, as a Jew, as an Old Testament prophet. The things that he made possible through his death only kicked in, only became effective after he died, after the blood flowed down the stake, through the earthquake crack, and onto the Ark of the Covenant. So that's the end of that article. We're going to have a look at 2022:05-04, Solid Evidence of the Reality of Yeshua, or Jesus. In May 2022, I came across the YouTube video, Is Jesus Historical? What Did the Romans Say About Him? And if you go into YouTube and search that, or search on Google in quotes, Is Jesus Historical? ? What Did the Romans Say About Him? ? You probably don't have to put it on quotes in YouTube. You'll probably get there anyway. It provides a very solid analysis of ancient Roman unbelieving texts, which validate the existence of Yeshua, incorrectly Jesus, but that's what they use in the video, in the early years of Christianity. It quotes a number of sources that are widely regarded in academic circles as authoritative to evidence that Yeshua, a wise man of Judea, really was put to death by the Romans and really did have followers. So if you got a deep settled assurance of the reality of Yeshua, don't worry about this. But if you're a bit shaky on that, not sure whether he really did exist, I think it's worth taking an hour and watching this video. I'm not going to try and give you the URL. The YouTube URLs are very obscure. Just search in the search window in YouTube, Is Jesus Historical? ? What Do the Romans Say About Him? ? I think you'll find it quite informative. So they also say that Yeshua was baptized by Yehuchanan John in 26 AD, and it's suggested that his age at that time was 32, not 30, as generally believed. It's further postulated that Yeshua was put to death before 37 AD. It's well worth watching. I'm not too hung about those issues with dates. I'm pretty confident that Yeshua was age 30 when he started his ministry, and 33 and a half when he died. So I wouldn't get too stuck on the fact that they, and as far as the 37 AD is concerned, I have it that I don't have a strong view on that, to be quite honest. I think it was closer I think he died about 30, well, that's about right, about 36, 37 AD would be about right. If you have the transcript of this, which will be on the website in due course, I've got the YouTube link there, just search for that description in the on YouTube. So I hope that this strengthens your certainty of the reality of Yeshua. I mean, I've been absolutely 100% certain that Yeshua is real for very, very many years. So I didn't really need to watch this video for my own sake, but it was certainly affirming and good to see. So anybody who believes or is trying to believe, go for it. Watch the video. It's a little bit of a caricature, but it's quite informative. There's a piece here about, do you believe that Yeshua existed because the Bible says so? Do you believe that he existed because somebody else, the pastor or somebody, says so? Or do you just believe because you've got a settled assurance that he's there, and you probably walk a journey to get there? So I'm now going to talk about 2022:12-07. Yeshua was a Judean, a Jew, and he spoke Aramaic and Hebrew. This is really important to understanding the Bible. The generally held belief is that the so-called New Testament was written in Greek, and I'm going to comment on that in the next few minutes. So I've long understood that Yeshua, Jesus, was a Judean or Jew from the area of Israel known as Judea or Yehuda, and spoke Aramaic and Hebrew and the language of Matthew or Matiyahu, Mark, John or Yahuchanan was Aramaic. such that the respective Gospels were written in Aramaic or Hebrew, but I've never substantiated this. The extracts below are provided to substantiate this fact. So if you look on Google for what language did Jesus speak, in quotes, you'll get about 13,000, or I got about 13,000 results. That's at the end of 2022. And the quote that I came up with there is, Jesus likely understood Hebrew, though his everyday life would have been conducted in Aramaic. Of the first four books of the New Testament, the Gospels of Matthew and Mark record Jesus using Aramaic terms and phrases, while in Luke 4:16 he was shown reading Hebrew from the Bible at a synagogue. This is really important, folks. Yeshua, not Jesus, was a Jew, not a Greek, and he spoke Hebrew and Aramaic, not Greek. And the people who followed him spoke Hebrew and Aramaic, not Greek. So most of the New Testament was written in Hebrew or Aramaic, not Greek. If you look on Wikipedia for the language of Jesus, you can Google Wikipedia language of Jesus in quotes. It says there exists a consensus among scholars that the language of Jesus and his disciples was Aramaic. This is generally agreed upon by historians. Aramaic was the common language of Judea in the first century AD. The villages of Nazareth and Capernaum in Galilee, where Jesus spent most of his time, were Aramaic-speaking communities. Jesus likely spoke a Galilean variant of the language distinguishable from that of Jerusalem. It is also likely that Jesus knew enough Koine Greek to converse with those not native to Judea, and it is reasonable to assume that Jesus was well-versed in Hebrew for religious purposes. So there we see it again, folks. And I'd really ask you to take this to heart. It's a lie that the Bible, the New Testament, was written in Greek. It was written in Aramaic and or Hebrew. It was translated into Greek for various reasons by people trying to escape from persecution of the followers of Yeshua in Israel and elsewhere. It was not particularly accurately translated, and it was transcribed, repeatedly copied, not particularly accurately. So you cannot have a high level of confidence in the accuracy of the New Testament. One article I read many years ago reported something like 1,250 discrepancies between different source manuscripts for the New Testament. And if you look on history.com, quote, what language did Jesus speak, unquote, while scholars generally agree that Jesus was a real historical figure, debate has long raged around the events and circumstances of his life as depicted in the Bible. In particular, there's been some confusion in the past about what language Jesus spoke. As a man living during the first century AD in the kingdom of Judea, located in what is now the southern part of Palestine. The issue of Jesus' preferred language memory came up in 2014 during a public meeting in Jerusalem between Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, and Pope Francis during the Pontiff's tour of the Holy Land. Speaking to the Pope through an interpreter, Netanyahu declared, Jesus was here in this land, he spoke Hebrew, and Francis broke in correcting him and said Aramaic. He said, referring to the ancient Semitic language, now mostly extinct, that originated among people known as the Aramaeans around the late 11th century BC. As reported in the Washington Post, a version of this is still spoken today by communities of Chaldean Christians in Iraq and Syria. News of the linguistic disagreement made headlines, but it turns out both the Prime Minister and the Pope were likely right. Most religious scholars and historians agree with Pope Francis that the historical Jesus principally spoke a Galilean dialect of Aramaic. to trade, invasions, and conquest. The Aramaic language had spread far afield by the 7th century BC and would become the lingua franca in much of the Middle East. In the 1st century AD, it would have been the most commonly used language among ordinary Jewish people, as opposed to the religious elite, and the most likely to have been used among Jesus and his disciples in their daily lives. So, folks, a lot of corroboration, and then we carry on. But Netanyahu, and I just point out to you, Netanyahu, the name of the Israeli Prime Minister, notice second part of his name. His name is spelled N-E-T-A-N-Y-A-H-U. Y-A-H-U, Yahu, is the name of the Almighty. So Netanyahu is an old style Hebrew name that refers to the Creator, and I've only just noticed this, but I'm sure that that has a meaning that relates to the Creator. So the quote carries on, but Netanyahu was technically correct as well. Hebrew, which is from the same linguistic family as Aramaic, was also in common use in Jesus' day. Similar to Latin today, Hebrew was the chosen language for religious scholars and the Holy Scriptures, including the Bible, although some of the Old Testament was written in Aramaic. The quote continues, Jesus likely understood Hebrew, though his everyday life would have been conducted in Aramaic. Of the first four books of the New Testament, the Gospels of Matthew and Mark record Jesus using Aramaic terms and phrases, while in Luke 4:16 he was shown reading Hebrew from the Bible at a synagogue. Continuing, in addition to Aramaic and Hebrew, Greek and Latin were also common in Jesus' time. After Alexander the Great's conquest of Mesopotamia and the rest of the Persian Empire in the 4th century BC, Greek supplanted other tongues as the official language in much of the region. In the 1st century AD, Judea was part of the Eastern Roman Empire, which embraced Greek as its lingua franca and reserved Latin for legal and military matters. So it's just so much evidence of this. Continuing, as Jonathan Katz, a classics lecturer at Oxford University, told BBC News, Jesus probably didn't know more than a few words in Latin. He probably knew more Greek, but it was not a common language among the people he spoke to regularly, and he was likely not too proficient. He definitely did not speak Arabic, another Semitic language that did not arrive in Palestine until the 1st century AD. So while Jesus' most common spoken language was Aramaic, he was familiar with, if not fluent or even proficient, in three or four different tongues. As with many multilingual people, which one he spoke probably depended on the context of his words, as well as the audience he was speaking to at the time. If we look further on Google, again, what three languages did Jesus speak? It is probable that Jesus knew the three common languages of the cultures around him during his life on earth, Aramaic, Hebrew, and Greek. From this knowledge, it is likely that Jesus spoke in whichever of the three languages was most suitable to the people he was communicating with. That said, Father has shown to me clearly that most of the New Testament was written in Aramaic and Hebrew and subsequently translated to Greek in an uncontrolled manner, such that there are doctrinal errors in these translations. Remember that both the Jews and the Romans were persecuting the early Christian believers, and thus the move to Greece occurred. Then if we look at Christianity.com, what language did Jesus speak? The general consensus is that Jesus primarily spoke Aramaic, while Hebrew and Greek were also commonly used throughout the Middle East and beyond during that time. Discover the usage and influence of different languages spoken by Jesus and the cultures around him through his life on earth. Look up the language of Jesus, Aramaic. It is the general consensus of religious scholars and historians that Jesus and his disciples primarily spoke Aramaic, the traditional language of Judea in the 1st century AD. The Aramaic was most likely a Galilean accent distinct from that of Jerusalem. Jesus spent most of his time in the communities of Nazareth and Capernaum in Galilee, which were Aramaic-speaking villages. The Gospels support this view, showing Jesus using various Aramaic terms Talitha Kume in Mark 5:41, Epaphatha in Mark 7:34, Eli Lama Sabatani in Matthew 27:46 and Mark 15:34, Abba in Mark 14:36. Historians, scientists, and social anthropologists largely agree that Aramaic was the prevalent language in Israel during Jesus' time. Aramaic was very similar to Hebrew, but with many terms and expressions that were acquired from other languages and cultures, notably Babylonian. There's more information on this on the webpage. Yeshua, Jesus, was a Judean Jew and spoke Aramaic and Hebrew. So, I hope this fairly wide selection of quotations, which all pretty much reinforce and corroborate one another, will give you a clear understanding that Jesus was not Greek. He may have been able to speak Greek, but the people that he was living with spoke Aramaic for the most part. Therefore, Yeshua primarily spoke Aramaic. You may wonder why I'm making such a thing about this, and it's important. Because if you believe that the New Testament of the Bible was written in Greek, which is the general belief, and then place huge relevance on detailed hermeneutical analysis of the Greek, you're missing a trick, folks. You're looking at a translation. What's more, you're looking at a translation of a translation, and you're looking at source documents which had been repeatedly copied with very little scribal discipline. So you've got to be very, very careful about what doctrine you build based on the New Testament, particularly where your doctrine clashes with what's clearly stated in the so-called Old Testament, which at some level was probably a little bit more accurately retained. But even that's a debatable statement. The main point in all of this is the Bible is a useful history book. That's where it ends. It's not the Word of God. It's simply a book, a very useful book, a nice reference when you're starting out, give you a good feel for Father's interaction with human beings, but that's where it stops. There are some passages which are inspired, particularly some of the letters towards the end of the New Testament. So I want to wrap up by asking you, what is the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator? I'd like to ask you to critically examine where you are relative to the Almighty Creator. Do you talk to Him constantly throughout the day and allow Him to lead you in every possible way? Are you conscious of Him at all times? Do you worship Him at every opportunity? Do you count Him your friend? Have you clearly and unambiguously heard Him call you friend? If not, you're failing in your life purpose, and you'll be bitterly disappointed when you die. I can't stress this enough, folks. If you're just sailing through life, maybe quite happily, maybe quite comfortably, doing okay, and you don't have a fix on the reality of the Creator, and what's more, you don't have a fix on the fact that when you die, you're going to be judged. At the one extreme, you're going to be found to be an unbeliever. You're going to stay on earth as an ancestor spirit or demon, either on your corpse, in the grave, in the crematorium oven, or you might be harvested and put on to haunt other people. At the other extreme, somebody who's really served Father faithfully in this life, mighty body, resurrected body, mighty powers, mighty authority, glorious body. It's up to you where you end up, but it's going to take a conscious decision and conscious effort if you want to be closer to the top of the scale rather than the bottom of the scale. So on the website, a few documents and a video to look out for. video, Why Seek Relationship, Miracle of Yeshua's Death, The Creator Desires a Deep Personal Relationship with You, Seven Components in Drawing Close to the Creator, Recommended Worship, The Creator's Name is Yah, the Eternally Self-Existing, The Essence of My Message to Christians, also similar articles for Jews, Muslims, and other faiths and unbelievers, all available at www.endtimeissueministries.org. That's endtimeissueministries.org. Transcripts of nearly all teachings in this series are available on the website at the bottom on the radio page. Recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far are available on the radio page, and they're all available at relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. Click on the show on the top menu and then podcasts on the drop-down, or search on Google for, quote, Relationship with Creator Radio. And you'll find that there's at least three or four podcast websites where you can get the back issues of all the broadcasts, which have been going now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Books constituting a compilation of most writings published since 1998 until May 2019 are available near the bottom of the menu at the compilation of most writings page. I publish regular email articles. Email me on james@endtimeissueministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel or prayer or give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. Those are all along the top of the web page, under the banner. A lot of flexibility there of ways that you can find information you're looking for. There are 2,500 articles in the article database, over 1,000 web pages. There may well be an answer to your question somewhere on that website. I've been building it for the last, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 years, something like that. And there's a lot of information there. Then in closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions to james@endtimeissueministries.org. That's james@endtimeissueministries.org. Please email me to join the mailing list at james@endtimeissueministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know and I can connect with you by Skype, Zoom, email, or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I hope to connect with you again next week when I will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. Work with me to make a way for Yeshua to return in victory at the end of the millennium and make his enemies his footstool. So what I want to stress to you, notwithstanding what you may have heard or read or believed or whatever, it doesn't matter who you are. Father wants a deep personal relationship with you. Doesn't matter whether you're black or white, whether you're Asian or African or Caucasian or European or Hindu or Jewish or Muslim or Hindi or Baha'i or Buddhist or Christian. It doesn't matter whether you're tall or short, fat or thin, educated or uneducated, rich or poor. It doesn't matter whether you've got blonde hair and blue eyes or black hair and brown eyes. Father Yah, the Almighty Creator, desires a deep personal relationship with you. It's up to you how close you get to Him. There's a lot of information on the website. Have a look at the articles I've just referred to. Watch the video that I've referred to, which is fairly close to the top of the webpage. Go for it. Thank you so much. Good night.
Father, I come to you, lifting up my hands. By your grace I stand.